Hey everyone, this is the Relevant Leader Monthly, a conversation to help equip the leaders of Relevant Community Church to become highly effective influencers. I'm your host, Ronnie Rothy. Joining me today is our equipping pastor, Nick Petrick, and community counselor, Joe Slaybaugh. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Ronnie.
So, guys, we're going to talk about a hard topic today. We're gonna talk about suicide. And we're going to talk about it because we're all going to know someone who is going to struggle with suicidal thoughts or be in pain because someone they love has died by suicide. And actually, you know, most of you guys listening know that this last month we had two people at Relevant die by suicide. We had a high school girl named Paige and then a guy named Sid. And it was just devastating. It was devastating for so many people, so many of you. Who knew them, who loved them, extraordinarily hard to navigate through. And to be honest, many of us are still navigating through that. And we're going to be navigating through it for a long time because whenever anyone passes, it's hard. But particularly when someone passes and dies by suicide, there's so much emotion and so many questions. And it's so sudden. So the reality is when someone we lead and we know is contemplating suicide, man, it is so important that we take extreme ownership however we can in their lives. And when someone has died by suicide in the team we lead, the group we lead, in our church, in you know, with just people that we know, it's so important we take extreme ownership of helping them navigate through their pain, their grief, their confusion. And Nick and I have actually asked Joe to help be here to help us do that today. And shed a little light on this. So, Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm just so honored to be here with you guys and get to speak into this a little bit. It's a tough topic, but man, it's so good to have these conversations. I'm an Omaha kid, so I've been a part of this community my entire life. I love what's going on in Elkhorn and the communities around Omaha, but being someone in the city and seeing my community up close, there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad in every community. And when I was a young guy, I just developed a passion through my relationship with Jesus, a passion to really help people in dark times. That kind of cultivated into ministry experience and vocational ministry. And I started at a young age as a youth pastor at a local church in town. When I was 18, nobody fired me. I couldn't believe it, but hung around for a little while. And honestly, ever since then, I've been in ministry predominantly in youth and then counseling. So for the last 15 years of my life, been helping people learn how to thrive, as Jesus calls us all to in John 10:10. That's happened through a couple different churches. I just stepped down of a church in Bennington just within the last year, and then also through some nonprofits and counseling organizations. Spent 4 years working for an amazing organization called Fresh Start for All Nations, which is a Christian counseling organization. I think you guys are familiar.
Yeah, and leaders, you guys are familiar with Fresh Start. Obviously, we have our Fresh Start group, and it's amazing. We'll probably talk a little bit about that here in a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
bit,
there you go. Yeah, and that really opened my eyes to the counseling world and how counseling and ministry run on parallel tracks. After that, spent some time as a crisis counselor at Boys Town, where my predominant job was suicide prevention and suicide awareness. So I would talk to people in crisis who were actively trying to kill themselves, and then I would go around to schools in Nebraska with our presenting team and talk about suicide prevention to students around the state, which was really a great opportunity. Both of those helped me learn that credibility is very important when you're going to talk about counseling. So I have spent the last 3 years working on a master's degree in clinical counseling, and now I'm stepping into my first official clinical job at City Care Counseling here in Omaha as a community counselor for them. So very exciting. It's been a long road, like 10 years of wanting to be a counselor, and I feel like I'm finally getting there, which is great, except there's still another 5 years to go to get that license. So tell you what, state of Nebraska, man, they really make you run through some red tape. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your humility but you're amazing. You know, we were talking about this before we started recording the podcast here, that your help and leadership and navigating with so many leaders here at Relevant, so many young people here at Relevant, through Paige's suicide was absolutely amazing. And it's why we asked you to be here. You have so much credibility with so many of us because of what you did through that situation. So thank you, man. Thank you for loving people so well, for really dedicating your life to this.
Well, thank you for saying that, but praise God, because that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Well, it's why we asked you here, because you know more than me and Nick about this. So we're
fair
like,
enough.
So Joe, I'm going to just throw a barrage of questions at you. And, the first question I have for you is, what are the signs that we can look for someone who's struggling with suicidal thoughts? Like, what are the signs of like, okay, yep, I realize now they really are struggling with this.
Yeah, great question. And let me preface by saying this. In this conversation, I'll throw out a lot of content. And the truth is that you're probably not, if you're listening right now, you're not going to hear everything I'm saying. You're not going to remember it. So I would encourage anybody that's listening to check out the American Association of Suicidology website, AAS. And they have a lot of content on there that I'm going to be talking about today. But that's a great reference point for anybody that forgets what's discussed here.
Yep.
If you want to go there kind of refresh yourself.
Yeah, and we're not going to be able to hit on everything.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
this is
a
big
topic.
Under 30 minutes here, you know, it's... But we just want to help equip you as leaders as best we can in a short way. And so thanks for saying that. So
absolutely.
That being said, Joe, what are the signs we can look
for? So jumping to the signs, we can always think about suicide as the culmination of hopelessness. So when you're thinking about a suicidal person, you're looking for somebody who is progressively losing hope. And that's kind of the first warning sign. And that can present itself in many different ways: physiological, emotional, mental, spiritual. Some of the most common signs that you're going to hear people talk about all the time would be excessive or increased substance abuse. People saying they have no reason for living anymore, no purpose in life. Excessive or increased anxiety or agitation, feeling trapped, like I mentioned, hopelessness. Rage, withdrawal from friends, family, society, uncontrollable anger, that'd be the rage I was talking about there, reckless activities and reckless actions, dramatic mood swings, and this is something that I experienced a lot when I was working at Boys Town. I would talk to people who were very suicidal, and they were giving away their stuff like you wouldn't believe. Like, it was just a garage sale all month long.
Wow.
Because they really didn't see any point to having it. One thing I also want to mention specifically for this church podcast is something called contagion. And a lot of people aren't familiar with contagion, but that's the understanding. It's a term in suicidology that talks about anyone who has committed suicide or died by suicide, someone who knows them, that sphere of influence, those people are now 5% more likely to have what we call suicide ideation. And that's just thinking about suicide. So those are going to be some warning signs you're looking for, but all comes under the umbrella of people who are progressively losing hope.
Yep.
And if you find that, then you're going to want to perk up those antenna and pay a little bit more attention to them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting when someone dies by suicide, how often people say, why don't they just tell someone? Why don't they just tell someone? And man, I can't imagine how hard it is to share, and people may not share. So, Joe, what can we do to help create environments in our teams, in our groups, in our families, you know, for people to want to share that they're struggling? And or what questions can we ask them, someone, if they think that we think that maybe they are struggling?
Yeah, that's great. A lot of people who are suicidal feel very invisible with their feelings, like nobody would understand or nobody even cares if they talked about it. The other thing that we need to understand is in society, currently, and it's getting better, I would say, but culturally, we have a lot of stigma against suicide. It's a real taboo topic. Somebody who admits to having suicidal thoughts is still kind of perceived as an individual that you want to kind of steer clear of, or, oh, they really need to go get help. When the truth is, the amount of people that actually have had suicidal thoughts in their past is enormous. It's probably the vast majority of us.
Yep.
So we need to, as leaders, we need to normalize those conversations. We need to be willing to create spaces where people can have deep conversations, just in general, but also deep conversations about their emotions, about what's going on in their life, their experiences. So normalization is actually going to be really key. And whether that's in a small group setting, a Bible study, maybe a youth group setting, whatever the case may be, making sure that we're having topics discussed that normalize depression, normalize anxiety, normalize hopelessness, because those are all going to be precursors to suicide. If we can do that, we're going to cultivate more conversations where people can actually start talking about the way they feel. You asked me a question. What are some great questions to ask somebody when it comes to just perceiving someone might be having a tough time, might be having some suicidal thoughts? Something that people don't realize, it's okay to directly ask someone, are you suicidal? As a matter of fact, there have been multiple studies on this that prove someone who is thinking about suicide is not going to become more suicidal if you just straight up ask them, hey, are you having suicidal thoughts?
Right, yeah.
Which is like the last thing that we want to talk about.
Right.
But counterintuitively, it actually is the most effective question you can ask.
Interesting.
Funny story, ironic, not funny, but funny, ironic. I had a conversation earlier this week at another church where I'm helping them out. They have a teenager who is actively having some suicide ideation going on. And he and I got together this past Monday. We're talking about his story. I'm getting to know him, getting to know his background, what's going on in his life. And I always make sure to do, it's called lethality risk assessment, LRA. That's what counselors are going to do when they're trying to assess someone's level of suicide. So I do this LRA with him at the end of our conversation. I just point blank ask him, hey, are you having suicidal thoughts? And he stopped. He's like, uh-oh, I got caught. Like, didn't know what to say. And he looked at me straight in the eyes and goes, no. And then I followed up, because sometimes what will happen is if somebody is asked the direct question, their immediate response is going to be to try to cover their tracks. So we want to follow up with another direct question. I said, have you had suicidal thoughts? Yes. When was the last time you had suicidal thoughts? Last week. So all of a sudden I'm realizing, okay, yes, you are having suicidal thoughts.
Yep.
You wanted to try to play it safe and not open up, but I'm going to follow through with more direct questions asking you, what is the nature of your suicide ideation?
Yep.
That's so important. And don't be afraid to do that.
Yep.
Honestly, as leaders, we can't be afraid to do that, because we are got to be the ones to create that safe environment. We can't have a safe environment if we don't know what people are thinking internally.
Yep. Yeah, and hey, group leaders, this is why we say you're the most important spiritual leaders in our church, and why our small groups, whether it's a Next Gen small group, a T-Life group, why we're just constantly saying, like, creating this environment and it being shepherds, being leaders to go, man, if it enters my mind, being willing to ask and try to create that environment where people feel safe to share. But, Joe, I know not every person across the board, but, you know, a lot of people that struggle with suicidal thoughts, you know, struggle also with depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. But what's the difference between someone being depressed and someone actually contemplating suicide? I know that seems like, well, the difference is they're thinking about suicide, but like, how can you like tell, okay, they're just depressed, they're just having a hard time, versus, man, this is a step past that.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. This is one thing that is really tough in the English language. We've got these words that mean so many different things,
right,
such a broad context that we can never fully understand when we apply it to someone individually. Like, for example, I love my wife. I also love tacos.
Yeah.
Like, same word, but very different connotation, right?
Yeah.
And depression, it falls in that same category.
For sure.
So I want to do this. I want to talk about the clinical definition of depression. That way we can all understand that. Then I want to talk about just the cultural, social understanding of depression.
Okay.
Because that's what we usually mean when you're feeling not so good, when you're feeling pretty depressed.
Yep.
So let me give you guys an example of what a clinical definition for depression is. A lot of big words here. It's the presence of sad, empty, and irritable mood accompanied by somatic, which are physiological signs, and cognitive changes that significantly affect an individual's capacity to function. Thank you, American Psychiatric Association. We get to study all that fun stuff in grad school. But all that to say, it's a clinical diagnosis that you are being affected so much by your mood swings, by your emotions, that it's inhibiting your daily function, whether it's physically, bodily, physiologically, mentally, emotionally, even spiritually. So that's clinical depression. Most days, almost all throughout the day, you are struggling with your emotions to the point where you can't function. Once we figured out clinical depression, we can move on to like social, cultural depression. Just not feeling good, not feeling like you're having a great time. There's seasonal depression for sure. There are definitely seasons where you're struggling. There's seasonal anxiety where you're just stressed out. But then when we were talking about from a suicide standpoint, like I mentioned at the beginning, depression is going to be the process of losing hope. That's really what it comes down to, just culturally. If we're not sitting in that therapist chair, we are talking to somebody and like, wow, you seem really depressed. What's going on? Well, what's happening is they've had so many experiences in their life that are causing them to progressively lose hope. And then, like I mentioned, suicide is the culmination of hopelessness.
Yep.
And that's where you get to the end of your rope and you don't see any other options.
Yep.
So if you are a leader and you're trying to identify somebody who looks depressed, what you're looking for is a pattern of them appearing less and less hopeful for their future. And then what you're looking for when it comes to suicide is a pattern of hopelessness, where they've reached the end of the rope, they don't see any other options, and they're done, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's awesome, Joe. Okay. Once we recognize that someone is struggling with suicidal thoughts, I mean, as leaders, as just followers of Christ, as friends, like we want to help take extreme ownership of walking alongside them, helping in whatever way we can. So Joe, my question for you is what can, or maybe the question is should, I don't know if it's can or should, what can or should we do when we know someone for sure is contemplating suicide? Like I said, they told us, yes, I'm having suicide thoughts, or I have had suicide thoughts. Like, okay, we've crossed that line. We know they're contemplating suicide. What can or should we do as leaders, as just their friends, as people in their life?
Yeah. That's what it comes down to as leaders, right? Because we want to make sure we're shepherding the people in our flock. So important. So if you have identified somebody that is suicidal, and let's say hypothetically you've asked them the question, are you suicidal? Are you having suicidal thoughts? Or you try to quantify that, have you had suicidal thoughts recently? And they say yes. So we've officially identified somebody who is suicidal. Well, I want to encourage you guys, and I'll teach you here real quick, how to do a real easy and brief version of what I was talking about, that lethality risk assessment, a real simple LRA. So we're going to assess the severity of their suicidal risk. And the way we want to do that is we're going to ask them, are they only thinking about suicide, or have they made preparations and plans for suicide? Let me go back to my example from earlier this week, talking to the 16-year-old guy. We're having this deep conversation about many different things in life. I've asked the question, are you suicidal? He's kind of dodged it a little bit, but we've identified that he's had suicidal thoughts within the last week. So I want to try to assess that. I want to try to figure out the severity. So I ask him, are you only thinking about it in terms of philosophical, or have you created some plans and some preparations? And he kind of goes into a story, and I was so thankful that he opened up to me. But he said he had actually started to write letters to friends and family members saying goodbye. And he had started to plan out text messages that he was going to send to people. And he was making preparations for suicide, is what he was doing. Now, if I was back at Boys Town and if I was doing my documentation like we all had to do as a crisis counselor, I would be putting him into a moderate risk category. And the reason why is because he didn't actually have a plan yet. That's irrelevant to you guys. That's what I would do on the clinical end. What you are hearing me say is if someone is putting together preparations and plans for suicide, then you want to pay close attention to them. Another great thing that we can do is asking how long have they been thinking about suicide? Just like with anything, the longer you do it, the more it's going to become influential in your life. So if you've been thinking about suicide for a few weeks, there's a chance that might be seasonal and life is going to change. If you've been thinking about suicide for a few years, then chances are that's a permanent pattern in your life. So that's a great question that we can ask when we're assessing for severity. And then the last one I was going to ask, just include you guys and encourage you guys to share with people who you're talking to, have they attempted suicide before? Mm-hmm. Statistically, people are 3, 4, 5 times more likely to repeat a suicide attempt if they've done it in the past. So those are three really great questions we can ask. We want to figure out, are they just thinking about it? Are they preparing for it? Or do they even have a plan to do it? Have they identified what they could use in their home or that they could get access to? That's the first category of our brief assessment here. Then we're going to talk about how long has this been going on? Has it been a period of weeks, months, days, even years? The last thing we want to do is, has this happened before? Have you attempted suicide in the past? And trying to assess the severity. Now, at the leadership level in ministry, And speaking as a youth pastor, a associate pastor of churches, I understand we need to stay in our lanes in ministry. If you are talking to somebody and they are hitting red flags on these questions at any point in time, my immediate recommendation is that we get them to the next level of care that we can. And that would be, I always tell people that there's a tiered approach to getting help. The bottom tier is relational help. That is, if you're having a hard time, you're going to go to somebody that you know, and you're going to open up about it. That could be a wife, a spouse, that could be friends, that could be a family member, a mom or a dad. Whoever's in your relational life that you know, you're going to go and talk to them for help. The next level in the tier is going to the community. Relevant Church is an amazing community that you could go to for help. And that's really where these leaders here in our podcast are coming into play. You represent the church. So when you're talking to somebody at the community level, you want to identify any patterns of suicide. The top level is going to be what I call professional help. And that's going to somebody who is certified, qualified, or accredited to handle suicidal people. If you are talking as a leader to somebody who has ticked those boxes on those three questions we talked about in our brief assessment, what I would recommend doing is we get them to the next level of help, which is probably going to be professional. Ask them if they'd make a phone call. We can set up an appointment. And we'll talk about that more in a little bit about who we can go to as resources. But we definitely want to go up to the next tier in our help model to make sure that they're taken care of.
Yeah, so actually, I just want to go right there. They are absolutely contemplating suicide. We've kind of hit that top tier. What resources would you say, you know, kind of that top tier resources, like here's what's available, here's where you can take him, here's who you could call. Because we want to be the most helpful we can.
Yeah.
What would you suggest there?
Yeah, so immediate responses. There's a lot of respite care centers around the city that you can immediately send somebody to for what they call a psychiatric hold. Now, this is going to be in an extreme situation, and I want to make sure I define what an extreme situation is. That's someone who, when we've done our assessment, they are thinking about it, they've made preparations, and they have a plan. That's an extreme situation.
Thinking about it. Make preparations.
And they have a plan.
Like, guys, I think that is so key, those three things to key in on. Thinking about it, have made preparations, have a plan.
Then we've got our extreme situation. So that's going to be a severe risk.
Yep.
We want to get them into a psychiatric hold. Great places around town, CHI Health, their hospitals have got a lot of psychiatric wards. Lasting Hope Recovery. Boys Town actually has a child and adolescent inpatient center at their research hospital. They also have a respite care center at their campus on 144th and Dodge. Emmanuel Hospital, Jenny Edmondson Hospital over in Council Bluffs, all these places have got immediate care. You can also take them to the med center, and they will get them in front of a psychiatrist as well. A psychiatric hold is going to be anywhere between 24 to 72 hours. They're going to be put into a room. They're going to have some assessments done by psychiatrists and psychologists. They're going to have some conversations with some people, and they're going to, what they're trying to do is mitigate stress in that moment. If we can take your stress level as a suicidal person from a 10 to a 5, then they've done a great job in that 24-hour to 72-hour period. So that's going to be our immediate response if we've got a severe risk. If we're going to take it a step below that, if we're talking to somebody and they're really struggling, and you ask them this question, do you think you can keep yourself safe today? And they say, you know what, I really don't know if I can. I would really encourage you guys to take advantage of the crisis lines that exist around our country. We've got an amazing network of crisis centers that are willing to take a phone call at a moment's notice or text with somebody at a moment's notice. And a lot of my friends from Boys Town on the crisis line, I can't recommend them highly enough. Amazing crisis counselors. From memory, Boys Town National Hotline, 1-800-448-3000. I still got it. I'd also recommend if you're talking to an adolescent, there's the Teen Hope Line at 800-394-HOPE. And then the National Suicide Hotline is Lifeline. Lifeline is actually a network of many hotlines put together. But Lifeline is at 800-273-TALK or 8255. Any of those would be a great opportunity for somebody to immediately talk to help.
Yep.
Once again, we're talking about a pretty severe risk.
Yep.
And underneath that tier, and I'll let Nick speak to this a little bit, more resources that are going to be intermittent. people that you can talk to who are on that depression level that are working their way towards suicide that you can intervene with as far as resources.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick, because I know we have some resources for people, like I said, not at the top risk, but, you know, who are just struggling with depression or just, you know, what are some resources we have here just even at the church that our leaders can refer people to?
Yeah, probably our best place to go is our care and support page on our website. There we have links to professional counselors. Joe works at City Care. We have a link directly to City Care, to Renee Johnson, and to Fresh Hope for Mental Health. They exist to help people find real hope for people that have mental health challenges and for loved ones who do. And so, honestly, those are great resources for people to be able to talk, to be able to figure out, you know, what's going on and what next steps to take. And then we do have other resources on that page, like there's a link to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline that Joe talked about. And so just checking out that webpage is great for all of our leaders to be aware of.
That's good.
And to know of that resource.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Joe, I so appreciate your time. I want to be respectful of your time. And I just have a couple more questions before we run out of time here. When it comes to minors, is there, and let's say it's one of our small group leaders or just one of the, any of us, if a minor tells us that I am having suicidal thoughts, man, all these resources are great. Is there anything that we are required to do? And by minor, we all know what that means, right? They're underage, under 19 years old. Yep. Is there anything that, like, you have to do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would preface that by saying the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services says that everyone's responsibility is suicide prevention. So under that umbrella, if you're talking to a minor, we do have some immediate responsibilities. Number one, we never want to guarantee confidentiality.
Yep.
That is a real problem, and that's a real temptation because somebody will be talking to you, and they're like, hey, I need you to keep this a secret. You cannot tell anybody before I say this. And the temptation is to say, yeah, absolutely. I won't tell anybody. I'll keep your secret. But that's actually – that could be really enabling for them. So we don't ever guarantee confidentiality, but we always enforce privacy. So especially if you're talking to a minor – we want to say, I'm going to keep this private between you and me as much as I can. But if anything in this conversation pertains to you hurting yourself or someone else, I have to talk to someone. And at the church level, at the ministry level, when I was a youth pastor, what I would always do, if I was talking to somebody who was suicidal, on the thinking level, the ideation, I would always make sure that I had to contact the parent or the legal guardian. Now, if it was beyond that, like let's go back to our assessment, if we have been thinking about preparations and they have a plan, or even if they just had preparations, I'm probably going to take it to another level where I'm going to talk to people on staff at my church. I'm going to be talking to maybe community leaders around. I'm going to make a phone call to maybe a hospital and saying, hey, can we get this kid in? But at the very least, we have to, as mandatory reporters, we have to tell the legal guardian of that child what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's the huge thing is every single person, when a young person, we're all mandatory reporters. It's not a – and guys, you want to be. Like, I know it's weird, but at the end of the day, if that young person ended up dying by suicide and we didn't do anything about it, you'd have guilt that – you can maybe never go away. And so, man, how important it is that just we go, if you don't know who to talk to the leader up from you at the end of the day, but we have to report it to their legal guardian, their parent or legal guardian. If, you know, they have a plan, they've thought about it. And what are the three things again, Joe?
Yeah. So if they think about it, they've made preparations and they have a plan.
Yep.
That's the severe risk. Even if they thought about it, if they tell you, hey, I'm having suicidal thoughts or I've had them, we need to talk to a legal guardian.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. Unfortunately, we know it's going to happen. People are going to die by suicide, and it's just so hard to go through. By the way, real quick, this is, you know, I'm old, and I just learned recently that the correct phrase to use is died by suicide instead of committed suicide. And so I've even used that phrase here. Joe, is that Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's gaining some traction, I'll be honest. So in all the textbooks that I'm reading and in all the clinical circles that I'm working in, died by suicide, completed suicide, or an attempt survivor, that's all suicide terminology that's being used. It's not really common right now. So committed suicide is still perfectly fine to say if you're mirroring the culture around you.
Got it.
One thing that can be really awkward is if you say, oh, they died by suicide, and somebody kind of looks at you like, what does that mean? Because it just really hasn't hit our culture yet. Yep. So we don't want to be too superficial for the sake of political correctness. Yep. However, you're right. Died by suicide is becoming more and more normal.
Okay. A couple quick questions left. I know we're almost out of time here, but when someone in our team group, someone in our church, someone that we know has, died by suicide, and the rest of us, man, we're just struggling with that. What can we do to help people in our team and group, or anyone that we know for that matter, navigate through the pain when someone they know has died by suicide?
Yeah, no, that's key. And this is the beautiful thing about the church, because it's made up of so many different parts, and each of us have a part to play as the different roles that we live in. As a counselor, I'm probably going to approach this question differently. I want to speak as a minister because I know that's who I'm speaking to.
Yep, yep.
And we're going to go right to the Word of God for our answer. Jesus is the perfect model of how to help somebody who's grieving the loss of someone who died by suicide or really died by anything. I love this story. It's in John 11. We see Jesus finding out that his friend Lazarus is going to pass away. And Lazarus' sisters, who are also friends of Jesus, Martha and Mary, they send word to him days before he dies. He's really sick. Hey, come over. Help him out. We know you can. Let's do it. And intentionally, he waits and he waits and he waits. And by the time he shows up, you guys probably know the story well, John 11, 4 days have gone by and Lazarus has been dead that long. He's too late. And yet in those moments, Jesus had a plan. And there was a three-part plan. And I love this. This is how we should comfort anyone as a minister, comfort anyone as a church leader. First thing he did when Martha comes running out to see him, the oldest sister, he addressed her cognitively. Martha comes up to him and she says, Lord, if you would have just been here, he would still be alive. And Jesus, yeah, he acknowledges that. But then he asks her this incredible question. He says, do you still believe that I am who I say I am? And so often when we're going through grief, we have got very dark thoughts about anything and everything. Is God real? Why do bad things happen to good people? And as leaders, we need to address those cognitive thoughts with response. That's exactly what Jesus does with Martha. Well, guess what? Right after Martha comes outside, everybody in town starts hearing that Jesus is outside the town. They get excited. Mary, who is, the younger sister in the family, she hears about it. She runs out of town to go meet Jesus in the fields. And she comes and sees Jesus. She says the exact same thing Martha does. Lord, if you would have just been here, my brother would still be alive. Jesus has a totally different response with Mary. We see empathy, and that is so key. So as a leader, we've got to address people's cognitions, their thoughts, but we have also got to address people's emotions. And that's where we get John 11:35 for all of my high school kids who want the shortest verse in the Bible to memorize. Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, it says in verse 36, he wept so bitterly that everyone who was mourning that day said, this man truly loved Lazarus. And that is so key. We have got to have empathy with people who are hurting around us.
Yep.
We cannot just say cognitively, you know what? God is still in control. You're going to be fine. Go on.
Yep.
No, Jesus modeled it perfectly. He wept with the people who were grieving.
Yep.
And that culminates then when we get to the end of the passage where Jesus addresses the spiritual needs of the group. Now, he's Jesus. He pulled a miracle off. I'm not going to be able to do that anytime soon, but he did what he did. And more importantly, he redirected people to their spiritual focus of giving glory to God. So as leaders, as ministers, and speaking in the ministry lane, if somebody's hurting from loss, specifically death, what we need to do is address their cognitions. We need to address their emotions with emotion. And then we need to address their spiritual needs by redirecting them back to God.
Yeah. That's great. Good. Man, I just want to add something to that too. Like one thing just I've learned so much is being a pastor, walking into a room, people just oddly think that I know the right things to say and I'm going to bring some type of hope that I'm not going to be able to bring. I think what people just need is just are not necessarily the right answers and words. It's just being there. Just being there and checking in on them and loving them, not worrying about what you say, and not saying stupid stuff like, another angel got its wings today, and just dumb stuff like that. You know, like, it's just not helpful.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't help anybody. And, and it's not biblical either. But so real quick, Joe, is there any, like, with someone who is really struggling because someone they know, love, has died by suicide, is there any resources that you'd go, hey, these are a couple resources that for them of, like, this may help them just navigate through that time?
There's a really great organization. It's a national one. They have many different meetings throughout the city here in Omaha. It's called Grief Share. Mm-hmm. And it's a free support group, very similar to, like, Divorce Care or even AA. You can show up. Many churches around the city have got these meetings going on right now on a weekly basis. You could literally find any day of the week. Grief Share exists simply to support people who are going through grief and loss. So if you've lost somebody to suicide, I would really encourage you to think about Grief Share. If you are dealing with somebody as a caretaker who is suicidal and you just feel like you're getting burnt out, you're getting overwhelmed, like Nick said, I would really recommend going to Fresh Start, talking to somebody there about how do we get free from the pain, the offense, the hurt that is going on in your life as you're seeing somebody deteriorating before your eyes.
Yeah,
that is so key. Yeah. Also, make sure to be plugging into your local church. Like, there's nothing more powerful than just getting in a community of people, a small group, a Bible study, whatever, and just sharing your story.
Yeah. And so T-Life group leaders, like, when you know this, like, creating the environment for people just to share and pray and in the groups and obviously next gen groups. Nick, is there anything else this relevant you would say these could be helpful just as people are navigating with pain?
Yeah. One of our resource partners, Fresh Hope for Mental Health, has just started a new group for people who are dealing with loss of someone who died specifically of suicide. And so that's a great connection, great resource that we have. And then another thing that I wanted to point out is that we have a very active prayer team at Relevant. And so they would love to pray for anyone. They would love to pray with anyone. We have a form on our Karen's support page connected to the prayer team that anybody can fill out what they would like prayer for, and then they can check a box that says, I would like somebody to reach out to me. And so that's a resource that I think we forget about a lot of times, but they would, along with our chaplains, they would love to come alongside people and really just support them.
Yeah. And so, I mean, our whole chaplain team, you know, they're trained to, you guys walk alongside of you when you're in pain and walk alongside of others, just to, not as clinical counselors, but just people within our church body that just love people and have a little training on how to walk through people who are in pain. So that's awesome.
Yeah, Ronnie, one last thing that I had at Paige's funeral, you did a really good job of answering a question that I've heard come up a lot. And so I thought it'd just be great to have you kind of share that. But the question is, when someone dies by suicide, a lot of times we wonder about their salvation. And so what would you say to people who have that question?
Yeah, I never quite understood why people struggle with being assured of a person's salvation who's put their faith in Jesus but who has died by suicide. I never understood that struggle because I don't think Jesus struggles with it. Jesus, he said some powerful words in John 10, recorded in John 10. He said, in starting verse 28, he said, I give them, and the them are those who have put their faith in him, I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one, which means no person, no enemy, no temptation, no sin, not even themselves. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hands. I and the Father are one. And we know this, right? Having a relationship with Jesus through faith in him, it doesn't mean we're perfect, doesn't mean we won't sin, doesn't mean we won't make mistakes, doesn't mean we won't hurt ourselves or hurt others. Hopefully that happens less and less, and we're prone to it less and less as we're transformed more into who God created us to be by following Jesus. Having a relationship with Jesus through faith in him, it just means we're forgiven. It means we're redeemed, we're restored in spite of those things. So we know the writers of Scripture promise that because of faith in Jesus, in his death and resurrection, all of our sins, past, present, future, are forgiven after we put our faith in him. So I don't quite understand why people struggle with that, and have made it like the unforgivable thing, because it's not. So that's always my initial response. But Joe, man, we're out of time. Dude, honestly, thank you for being here, brother. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all your insight. It's been awesome. Leaders, let's take extreme ownership of this, because it's so important. Many people we know and lead are struggling, and many people will be impactful because it's unfortunately going to happen again. Mm-hmm. So before we go, guys, remember, hey, subscribe on the podcast you're listening to, on the platform you're listening to, so you get the Relevant Leader Monthlies automatically to your podcast channel. Guys, let's take extreme ownership and lead well. God bless you.